You mean from a royalties perspective, what opportunities are out there for royalty companies, you mean?
Who's a good
So what you
potential
want, yeah,
producer?
so yeah, so what you want to do is you want to look at all the development plays. So you look at all the development plays and see, who doesn't have an NSR, and then you would look, and then you try to work with them. So the companies that are trying to fund their CapEx, you would go in and try to get a streaming deal with them. And that's what all these companies are doing is, like I said, there's about 20 of them now. So they're going out to these companies that are in development, and they're basically saying, you need money to, pay for your CapEx. Let's see if we can do a deal here. So companies, they go in, and ironically, they're very common. These streaming deals are very common, and they make me nervous.
They're probably flooding the markets with capital then. It seems if there's suddenly 20 companies, then there's probably they're not battling. This seems to form a mezzanine finance space where there's supernormal returns,
That's a good,
essentially.
that's a really good term, mezzanine. So the mezzanine is basically a chunk of the CapEx. So that, and
Yeah.
so it's out there for
Which is
the taking.
almost a bond, but it's also convertible to equity because essentially it's almost like a convertible bond because it's getting the upside of the early risks as well, but at quite good terms.
Because the banks are not going to loan you 100%. So you're going to have to do equity financing, and you're also going to have to, a lot of them do streams or gold loans. Streams are very common. And one thing that's happening because of inflation is the CapEx has really been increasing. It used to be where you could build a mine for, 100 million to 200 million, 250 million, a starting mine. Now it's becoming more rare to basically be able to build a mine for those costs. They've really jumped. Where I used to see CapEx, 100 million to 250, the same size mine, like a 100,000 ounce mine, now they're jumping to 300 and 400 million for the CapEx. They're really price, it's getting very expensive to build these mines. So if it's getting very expensive to build them, the CapEx, then they need to go to these royalty companies and do these streaming deals because it's really the only way they can build a mine.
Yeah, I can see that. And diesel going up, lumber going up, all of these commodities going up are actually putting that cost up on them. There's a very similar thing in the tanker business, the oil tanker business now, because of the green laws. And I know of people that have funded three or four tankers, and they don't get bank funding. They essentially get these hedge funds. And they have upside deals on their daily rates and everything. So it's an equivalent of streaming with the royalty companies in mines, I feel, because they have provided finance for these 60, 70 million secondhand used ships to go into the Black Sea, which is kind of a bit of a risk with the Russia-Ukraine thing. But they're now getting unbelievable rates a day now. They're getting up to $100,000 a day for moving cargo, so that they've just blown the returns off, but you can't get bank funding anymore. It's fascinating how this level of financiering and sharing the upside, it's risky, but it's once you've got it in and you've got a producing mine, those contracts are golden, aren't they?
Yes, they are. For instance, a payday loan, what is what, 40%, right? These loans can go much higher than that if the price of gold and silver go up. It's unlimited profit as the price, because they just get more and more cash flow. The cash flow just gets larger and larger and larger as the price. Their costs are pretty much fixed. They just have to pay a certain price for the gold and silver, and so that's why their margins are 80-85%. It's because their costs are all locked in. And so, yeah, they're really sweet deals if, the company is producing and the price of gold and silver are going up, which I think is going to happen here. And so these a lot of these royalty companies are going to do extremely well, no doubt about it.
Yeah, that's interesting discussion. Yeah, And I'm encouraged that they kept it but sub 10% though, because I think minds would probably say, well, we've got to just wipe our mouth on that one and just let it go. You know, it's just a bit of a bitter taste, but at the end of the day, they funded us in during the risk period. Yeah, that's fascinating. What's your big calls? What do you see that you feel you deviated from the rest of the market and consensus view in and around mining, marginal miners, gold or silver, or even the macro, because I know you're a student of all.
Francis, could you repeat that?
Yeah, sure. Any big calls, any things you think that people haven't seen, any outlier views that are not typically in the consensus discussion that you see either on macro, mining, gold, silver prices, or anything like that? Is there anything you're known for being a little bit out on the fringe? Because I love the people that have fringe views. Okay.
Yes, I'm definitely on the fringe, and I get a lot of pushback for this. I value mining companies using future prices. I think that, and I don't really care about what a miner's doing today, as long as he's going to, basically he's solvent, and he's going to be solvent. That's the only thing I really care about. How I value a company is I take their current market cap, and I estimate their future cost, their future production, and the future price of gold and silver. And then I compare that to the current. So I estimate a future market cap, and I compare that to the current market cap. And that gives me what I'm expecting to make. And so I only invest in companies that I think are going to make at least 300%, but ideally, and I do some 300 and 400%, but those are really for diversification. I'm really looking for 5 and 10 baggers. It's hard to pick anything beyond a 10 bagger. It's almost impossible, but you can pick 5 and 10 baggers, especially today when things are relatively cheap and things are undervalued. So I don't like to invest for the near term. So I'm always projecting out 3 to 5 years. My goal. I'm looking 3 to 5 years, and I use $2,500 gold and $100 silver for my future gold and silver prices. Now,
can I interject here? Because this is a great theme of discussion, and I'm going to definitely hand the talking stick straight back to you. But do you look at those then that might have increasing production as we go into that? So mines that you might have the ones that are mature producing but tapering, while you might have others that are earlier in the growth or production.
My future market cap is based on their future production. So I'm estimating future production. And so, yeah, growth is very important for that future market price to occur. So I kind of lost my train of thought. So I'm always looking into the future to get big returns. And so all of these stocks that are on this list right here, if the reason why they're on that list is because they're relatively undervalued versus their future market cap, where I think they're going to get to. So it's built in for their growth. Most of these companies are growth companies. That's the reason why I like them. They're going to grow production. And they're not only, and so it's a combination of growing production and then the higher, well, now I remember my train of thought, $100 silver. So the reason, in my opinion, $2,500 silver is very conservative. I expect $2,500 gold. So I think we're going to get to at least $3,000 gold, but I use $2,500 because I think that's kind of a conservative number. I started using this back in when I did my website in 2012. I'm still using the same numbers. Now, I thought about using $75 silver, which was a better number. $50 silver, in my opinion, is too conservative. So I thought about using 75, but I said I'm going to go ahead and use 100 because it's a round number. I decided to use a round number, and a lot of people give me a bad time saying, 100 is way too big. But I do think that we are going to see $100 silver. So I don't think it's crazy land to use 100 to project my valuations into the future. But I will be raising my gold price. Right now it's at 2,500, but once gold gets to over 2,000, 2,100, I'm going to bump it to 3,000. Maybe I'll take it, but I'm going to raise it up above 2,500 once I'm feeling it's going to go higher. So that's how I invest. I basically compare what a company is worth today and then what I think it's going to be worth in the future. Now, what I think it's going to be worth in the future is what I call my maximum. That's the maximum theoretical outcome, right? On $2,500 $100 silver, that's where I think it's going to be. So I look for these companies. If they're below 300%, I usually pass. I'm not interested. I call those companies too pricey, if you will. Yeah. And I don't buy a lot from 3 to 5. The majority of the stocks that I buy, 90% of the stocks I buy, they print out at 500% or higher. And so I'm going for big returns. Now, I'm a believer. The only reason I'm doing this is that I'm a believer that this is a once in a generation run in gold and silver, where gold is going to get to 3,000. So if gold gets to 3,000 and the GSR goes to 30.
Yeah, I think quite feasibly go beyond on both of them.
Yeah, so if gold gets to 3,000 and the GSR, the gold silver ratio, goes to 30, which I think it will, that takes you to $100 silver. So my $100 silver is not crazy talk, because a 30 GSR is actually really not a bad projection. We got to 39 back in 2011, and silver was only above 40 for a month. So if silver would have been above 50 for 3 months, the GSR would have came down to 30. It would have kept shrinking. And so
just to chip in, Don, and I'm loving the conversation. The last gold-silver ratio dipped low, which was the 80s, it was about 16.9. We said in our analysis of how low the gold-silver ratio could go, we actually see sub-double digits. So that's actually a 9.99 call, potentially, because the scale of the collapse and the end of cycle that I assess we're going through is going to be even far larger than the events of 80, where actually we didn't have anywhere near the same amount of debts in there. So I think you've been quite conservative, and that you've got overshoot potential. I mean, crypto-like overshoot potential for some pump coin that's just been released with Elon Musk tweeting about it sort of story. So I'm very good with what you do. And what I also like about what you're doing is essentially you're looking forward. So if I were summarizing what you're saying is, I'm looking at a five-year view. What will the market cap of this company be in 5 years, assuming the gold price, let's say 3,000 now and 100 silver, is, and where is it priced now today? And does that represent a 10 bagger or a 5 to 10, let's say 7.5 as an aggregate bagger over that 5 years period? And I love that as a valuation. In other words, it's very much like being the fighter. You've got to, you don't punch at the guy, you punch where he's moving to, because there's a delay in the whole process. So it's a great methodology.
Yeah. And so what I do is I calculate that future market cap, but I also calculate the future free cash flow. And so when I have that future free cash flow, then I actually put a multiple on it. And so that's how I know how basically that the free cash flow is really what's so important. So you can look at the current free cash flow, and then you can see what it's going to be at when they add production and gold prices go up. So you can see this huge jump in free cash flow. And that's what gets me excited, because that if you can project out a really high increase in free cash flow, you're also projecting out a huge jump.
Are you expecting that dividend, or are you expecting it as reinvestment into mine extension and new cap expenditure?
No, what I'm doing is I'm just calculating their future cost, their future all-in cost, their future free break-even cost. So I take that cost, let's say on gold, let's say somebody has a 1,000 all-in cost. It's a very low producer, but I'm just using a round number of 1,000. And then gold is at 2,500. That's $1,500 an ounce in free cash flow for every ounce they do, 1,500. And then if they produce 100,000 ounces, that's basically $1.5 billion in free cash flow.
Yeah.
So then you take that $1.5 billion and you basically say, okay, what kind of a multiple is it going to get? Well, if gold's at 2,500, the multiple is probably going to be at least 10.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, and so somewhere right there, but a major, and so it depends. So it's somewhere going to be at least 8, 10, 15,
yeah.
20, right? And so you can get a really good feel for what these companies are going to be worth. And so that's that. I wanted to go back to what you talked about, the GSR shrinking much below 30.
Before I let you do that, once you go back to, you know, banks and financial institutions used to get rocketing PEs because they were like, well, that's where the money is. Once people get back to understanding that gold and silver is money and everything else is fiat, there's nothing to say they can't even get, you know, approaching financial services levels multiples, never mind the normal 7 to 9 to possibly 10 PE ratios. Anyway, sorry, I'll just leave that in. But that is real money, isn't it?
Yes, I think that my projections are actually conservative because I'm not using high multiples. And I think that we are going to see high multiples because the companies are actually going to get stronger balance sheets. And as they get stronger balance sheets, they're going to get higher multiples. That's just how it works. And so I think a lot of companies today, their multiple is going to go up, you know, 50%. So you're getting a 50% discount right off the bat, just based on multiple expansion. And so you get kind of the
15-20 is easily feasible once you've got a number of years of just generating huge wads of cash.
Yes. You talked about me being conservative, and you talked about the multiple shrinking. And this is where it gets interesting. And the people that have stuck around to listen to this, this is where you can really, your ears could perk up a little bit. So right now we have a multiple of around 75, the GSR of 75. And I'm saying it's going to go down 2x. It's going to go to 30. So basically 37, it would be 100%. Silver would outperform by 100%. You're basically saying it's going to do it again. It's basically going to go from 37 down to 17. You're thinking that's kind of your target. So that's another multiple, right? So you're not only getting, you're getting like a 200%. Yeah, 200% leverage on your silver miners versus your gold miners. Not 100%, but 200% leverage potentially. Now that's point number one. Point number two is you mentioned $3,000 gold, you know, that we could go higher than that, or $100 gold, we can go higher than that. The margins, if you get above those numbers, if you get above $100 silver, the margins are just the free cash flow, the increase, it adds so much value to these companies. These companies, in other words, you project out, you think that they're gonna be a 5-bagger or a 10-bagger. If you get to 125 silver, 150 silver, 175 silver, these things, these miners have the potential to just, I mean, valuations that are unheard of, if you will. It's like fantasy land. I always tell people I can't count that high. But when you get margins of that magnitude, if you will, the free cash flow explodes. So what do they do with all that free cash flow? You know, they're going to start paying dividends, huge dividends.
Yeah.
Right?
Which you invest. Yeah. And buy deeper into, you compound in.
And if they do that, their multiples are going to go even higher. So you could see, you know, companies have multiples, you know, that you don't expect, multiples that you just don't expect. Now, again, this is if things get nuts, things get wonky. The only way we get to, you said double, you know, really low multiples, below 15, right? A GSR of 15. The only way that you get multiples of that is if silver gets above 100, in my opinion. Silver's got to just go.
I'm talking 250 and plus, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to go nuts.
I have to say within that, we probably won't recognize what that dollar is in light of what it was in buying power yesterday and today, you know. A dollar may not get you anything, you know, but it's a diminished dollar is what I would be saying.
Right, but the miners, yeah, but the miners are going to protect you for that type of inflation.
Of course, yeah.
Because they're basically going to be printing money. They're going to be, you know, so much free cash flow. They're going to be the apples, you know. They're going to be the new apples of the world with, you know, billions on their balance sheet.
Potentially. And I also don't even think it will be in the dollar as we know it today either. It will probably be in some quasi-equivalent CBDC, because I think a bunch of other things would have happened. But it won't change the fact that the value of wealth will have been retained so well and appreciated so far that whatever that benchmark will be compared to what will probably be known as the old dollar or the greenback, we'll be in and around what we consider $250 today. Yeah.
So we didn't really, people really like to have targets. I wanted to talk a little bit about because we haven't broken out yet. So we look at kind of the bottom, and then we look at where we're going to break out for gold and silver. So we look at gold. Gold had basically a triple bottom right around 1615. I do not think we're going to retest that. But I do think we're going to probably go down and possibly touch 1700 right around there. So I'm looking 1680 to 1725, somewhere in there. That's kind of a lower high. So that's kind of the last one. And then silver is it's low as 1750 around there. I don't think we're going there. But we're probably, I'm hoping that 19 holds. So I'm looking somewhere between 19 and 20 as the next lower high. And then once that happens, then we're going to look at, okay, now we can start looking at the breakout. We need one more big correction before we can start looking at the breakout. So where do you want to get in? Now, you can get in at the bottom. So the HUI right now is about 230. You probably want to get in around 200, 210, somewhere around there. Once we go down, this is the last correction. That's the getting in at the bottom.
You see, if we lost our banks and we lost balances in the bank, and they said, look, we're going to recompense you, your central bank will issue you with a UBI equivalent, but you have to do the following and get your BACS ID and your, you know, all your credit scoring and all of that nonsense that they also seem to be bringing. But if they did something like that and that they problem reaction solution doesn't kept our head under the water for a whole bunch longer, even then COVID, you could have such a charge for liquidity where you get forced sellers. And we could have a ridiculously low paper price, but it would just be an opportunity. You just don't want to be in the position that you have to sell because you have to make a rent check or pay service some debt or find food. I think we could have a bigger crisis than many people are realizing. But I just think that should be an opportunity to accumulate, but you have to already be cash out the system, but in something that holds value, much like gold itself, to be able to buy more gold and or silver. There's so much counterparty risk coming the next cycle, I think, that we could, you know, people's value. If I look where they're taking us, and again, I'm wearing a different hat, it might make you uncomfortable, I hope not, but that there's a full reset. And one of the things they need is for people to become entirely reliant on them. It is a great hollowing of the middle class. How do you do that? You destroy wealth. So the problem we have in an environment where they destroy the layman, retail, middle class, particularly and middle upper class, as well as the working class's wealth, is how do they do it any worse than what they did in CV19? Well, they you lose bank balances maybe or something. The global hack or something World Economic Forum is. So in that event, what would happen to the paper gold and silver price? It would probably collapse quite low, maybe even further than we think. But it's not
that you're right. That's a possibility. I'm glad you bring it up. It's kind of a caveat, right? But I think the lows are in here. I think this is the opportunity to buy. I think this is the final dip that we can buy. Now, so that's the bottom. Now,
yes, that's not one, my narrative is not one, therefore you should wait for this opportunity at all. I think if you don't own it and trying to time excessively on such unknown, draconian, out there thoughts that I've just described, you've got to be got to set it out.
Right. I'm just setting the stage for what I'm going to say next for the breakout. So what I'm saying is that I think that this next dip is the last dip, if you will. And we haven't broke out, we haven't run, but this is what to look for when we do break out. And we're getting, I think now is the, I think it's going to happen either in Q1 or Q2, where we're actually going to hit the bottom and start running. So for silver, I think $27 is when you basically really start paying attention. Until we get to 27, it's all noise. Then once we get into the 27s, that's really when it's like they're getting ready. It's like, you know, the horse race, the horses are getting in the paddock and the bell's going to go off once we hit 28. Once we go above 28, I think that's the go sign for silver. Now for gold, I think it's the horses get in the paddock at 1900 and then say 1950 is when the bell goes off. So those are the numbers you want to look for the breakout, because everybody's going to be talking about the breakout. They're talking about it now at 23, 24, 25. Everybody's going to be talking about it. But I think it's going to take about 3 months to get through those levels. So now it's just we're in a waiting period. But once we get to 27, once we get to 1900, we just have to wait for that to happen. Once that happens, you basically want to make sure that you have some exposure, because that is the go sign for here we go. I mean, the next run, in my opinion, is going to be the run of the ages, because I think the next run is probably going to last. For silver, is probably going to go all the way to 60, 65 before it corrects significantly. I mean, we might get stuck at 35 for a month, but we're not going to get any correction. We're not going to go 35 back to 30, I don't think. So it's basically going to be 28 to 60. Well, what do you think?
I'm told that with the time frames you prepared to sit, you're not a day trader and you're not a short-termist by any nature. I love your valuation model of, you know, the 3 to 5 year room. I think everything I heard is very conservative. I can't see us in 5 years not being 3 digits silver.
What do you think about going from 28 to 60 in Q1 or Q2?
So if we look at that, what you see is this was the lows of COVID, the two blue lines and the rally that subsequently occurred. And we've got us all in being this broadening, softening period that actually in momentum terms is far less strong momentum on the downside than the extremity of the move was to the upside. So that is inherently bullish, but it has been quite prolonged. So you've had a sell-off spell there, you had a sell-off spell there. This was attempting to hold the 22. 22 was a key level for us, which is very good that we got back above as a key level. The next key level, it was interesting to hear you mention 27, because I've got 28 as a key level. We topped out there and we couldn't hold above it there. We had a spike on the Wall Street silver bet story after running into the 28 and the 28 there. And actually, even our high points of the gold silver run that followed the pandemic, we didn't hold above 28 very long. So that very small iceberg moments, I call them sort of peak of icebergs over the 28. So that has been an unholdable level for any sustained period. We didn't have a week. This is a daily chart. We didn't have a week where we stayed above 28. And I think that's going to be a key level. And I think it dovetails a little bit with your, you know, 27, 28. I think there's pretty much the same narrative. The key level then to get out of is to, we've had a descending lows, for example. So if I highlight this, descending low on silver, that's had a bit of a gap out high with the Wall Street. It was a bit of an exception, descending low. And we've been running along this level. What I'd like to see is coming back, even retest the 22 if we have to, prove a base of support there, and then wind up and maybe have a continuation pattern that breaks us out of this descending and capping range. So that for the first time, We're out of that line. That will be a 26 break. So that's the number 26. And I would also like to take out the previous localized high, which was in and around the 27, which comes back again to your point around the 27. So I'd like to see us break that last localized high. And then if we have, even if we have a pullback after that, but fail to make obviously a new low. So we start the Dow theory of higher highs, higher lows again. And I think then 30 is a matter of a time. And for your 3 to 5 year outlook, I think the events of reset will be so extreme that you're going to have parabolic moves. I do think we're talking about single dollars here and getting from 23 to 24. We'll be laughing about this analysis in 3 to 5 years' time because it will be, it'll be $100 and you'll have weeks in which you'll make $7, $8, $10. So I do think that it's going to be a distortion. I'm seeing parabolas, but it's difficult to visualize at this junction when this is your price action. So we are coiling up for something that is very, very vast, but it's difficult to show in this. I have to go to a bigger time frame. If I go to a bigger time frame to the monthlies, and particularly on gold, it's easier with gold because then you just apply the gold-silver ratio. If I log scale this, and I'll just take all those lines off for a second. Even in silver, this to me is a macro rising wedge that's probably going to have a melt up out of it. We're still in the bottom. I split rising wedges in half, so I've got a splitter in there. So that was your localized high that goes right back to the 80s, which was when you got $50. We had a truncated bull that just surpassed it. This is a big rising wedge, and we have what we call the three impulse rising wedges. And you've only done a half move. It's not even the third impulse. The third impulse has to go up there and then have a bit of a down leg, and then I see us melting out the top. That's when it just goes berserker. That's when you're going triple. So we're still in this very benign period, actually, which is almost boring, where you've come back down out of the second impulse, and you're having a little bit of liveliness, and you're getting ready to get up to the top. Now, that top would represent $60, another number that I think you mentioned. And then you could have a tiny bit of easing back in, but this macro rising wedge is a melter. It pops out the top, and it's a melter. That's what I'm scenario costing. So there's still quite a bit to go down in this.
I think 55 is going to be a good place to take profits.
Yes, because you might make the problem they'll have. So you've got to remember these guys are managing this game and they hate gold and silver because it highlights their inaustricity, their non-stoicism, their non-sound money principles. So one of the reasons I assess the rising wedge, as it happens often, is that the new high gets all the people that have never paid any attention in the retail and they get handed a loss. You had the new high on silver there, and it literally was a marginally higher high. Everyone who chased in on the momentum were bag holders on the bear market back down. So what you just said about 55, 60, in the exact same way, when the media is screaming, oh my God, everyone should be gold and silver, is silver and gold money? They can't bear that message too long. The current controllers of the scheme. So it would be a perfect time to hand everybody a smash down. So again, as you run the previous high there again, they'll send it back down again and give the retail people
Once we get above 50, I think we're going to go a little higher, right? That's why I say 60 is probably when it's going to correct. But looking at this chart here, it does look like 60 is going to be a correction point.
It could be a correction point, but if you've got the long term that you have view, I would say you want to have a 5, even 10, 15 year for this. But for many people, they hate hearing that. But I think a lot happens well before then. But for the 60, I could see that happening, during 23, 24, 25. And everything escalates.
Yeah, so I talk a lot about my exit strategy. So my exit strategy is to sell to the top. And so my first sell is basically 50, maybe 45 silver. And then I want to sell all the way to the top. So I'm going to sell like every $10, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. So when we get to $100 silver, I'll have sold probably 80% of my miners. Keep 20% of them in case we go to 150. But that's my plan. And the same with gold. So for gold, I won't start selling until $2,500 gold, maybe $2,400. And then I'll sell to the top. Every $100, I'll be selling miners. Sell to the top. That's my
point. My comment on that is that people will sell too fast, too soon. They won't have seen the scale of this, generally. And I think maybe be slower. Take some off the table, but maybe be slow. I can see this going parallel.
Will I say 80%? Maybe I only sell 70. You know, something like that.
Yeah. You will have done well.
But you definitely want to take profits because you never know when something's going to happen and you hit a top and you didn't take advantage of it. So I want to say
the macro cycle is going to be bigger than anything anyone else has seen before. And yes, there will still be pullbacks in that. There's no straight line ups. There will be pullbacks and churn. So hence the 50-60 sell point is a good one. But I would rebuy if it comes back to 35. I would get engaged again.
Yeah. Can you bring back the silver daily that you had?
Sure.
I wanted to get your opinion. So I'm on the silver daily you just had up.
That's the silver daily.
Okay, so yeah. So I don't think that, you know, I feel that we're not going to go back to 1750 at the bottom, but 22 holding, that to me is very, you know, iffy. You know, we just went through 22. So I just don't see 22 holding. And the reason why is because I think that the S&P is going to go down at least 10%. And I think 10% is very conservative. I think it's going to go down 15. So that's $100 drop in gold. So if gold's going to go down $100, you know, silver's going to get whacked too. 22 would be the ideal level, but I don't think it's going to happen. 21, looking at your chart here, 21 is a possibility. 20, you know, you're looking at 19, 20, 21, somewhere here. But here's my thought, is that if we go down, I think it's going to be very short-lived. We'll go down, hit a bottom, bounce. And I mean, we'll bounce fast. Like I think in 1 week, it might only go down there. It might be a weekly, you know, weekly candle that's below 22. And then once we get above 22, I don't think it's going to take long to go from 22 to 26. I'm thinking it might only take a month, 2 months. So if we get a bottom here in the next 30 to 60 days, well, I'm thinking January, February, that this low comes in. Then if that happens, April, May, 2 months might be all it takes to get to 26. And once you're at 26, it's not that big, it's not that far away from 27, 28. So it's looking like, you know, late spring, early summer is when this run's going to happen. Now, the last time that silver broke out was in June 2020. So maybe it's June. Maybe that's when we basically break out.
I see this current. I don't know if you saw the little doodle I did for you here, just on what's known as a, you know, you spoke about the bottom being in at 17. I think that's a short of an extreme demand killing event. That is a pretty good localized low and possibly a final low. I just don't know what the future holds as part of a crash scenario. An Armageddon scenario, but we've got a bit of a neckline at around 20.8 here, and it's been a very key level. So talking technically, let's just go take those two lines, 20.8. We actually saw this as a bearish event, and we called it. So we've not been perma bulls on the paper price. When we've seen bearish things, we've called them out, and that was very bearish, and it was all forming in and around the 20.8. Since then, you've done a left shoulder, which I'll over here in the blue, that's there, just on that, where the 20.8 is a bit of a neckline. So this is a neckline. Done a left shoulder, you've got a complex head, which gave you your 17 low.
Yeah.
17.3. And this has been a right shoulder. And that's typically a reversal pattern. And you can see the 18.5, which was a key level that came from COVID for silver, because it's basically where it bounced and then dipped back down and then touched again and bounced and came back up and then smashed through.
I think there's a good chance that 20 holds there.
Yeah. Well, the target of this head and shoulders has a 25 target. You know, it's just 24.90. So even though we've had a little bit of a easing here, I think at this move we at least get the 25, and possibly we visit this capping descending grind line that I've highlighted before, and we meet the other side there. If given that you might get a bit of a pullback at that point, and we may have our
And then, yeah, before the correction comes, I'll be surprised if we get to 26. It's possible. The reason why I don't think we'll get there is because I think the dollar is going to rally a little bit here.
I think it's going to rally.
And so, you know, we could get to 25, but I think yesterday, it's down 3% tonight, by the way. So silver looks like, I think silver might be rolling over here.
It has rolled over. So that doesn't mean it's the rollover to end all rollovers. We drew this rising wedge here. So on a shorter time frame. So now I'm taking you in a little bit into, you know, the Fed speak. And this is a rising wedge. This is what we've had here. And we were saying don't run in and buy. It's right this second.
Right. It's just signaling that it's not running yet. And so
it dropped this rising wedge, but that just means it's going to have a potential pullback. That doesn't mean the end of the world. So it could even come as far as 22. I don't think so. No. But it could have a corrective move down. That's a signal.
So the last time that silver basically ran like a champion was June and July of 2020. It only took 6 weeks to go from 1850 to 29.
Yeah.
So
that's what I said, it'll get properly going like you've never seen before.
Yeah, I think that when it goes from say 25 to 28, I don't think it's going to take very long. Maybe a month, maybe 6 weeks to go from 25 to 28. And so how long does it take? So when we go down to 20 and we get a bottom and a 20, you know, how long does it take to get from 20 to 25? Probably, you know, at least a month, maybe 2 months, but May, June looks like a very good possibility to get to 27, 28.
Yeah, indeed. I see lots of very, very good potential on it. Sometimes I find gold is almost a better one to look at because it's the more traded. And we can always apply a multiple gold-silver ratio. And sometimes you see things technically on gold or vice versa on silver that you don't see on the other. But gold is the bigger market, and I would call gold the god market if you want.
I call it the big dog. And silver I call little sis. Yeah, it's definitely gold. Silver is not a big enough market to carry gold, but gold's a big enough market to carry silver. So yeah, I think that gold will basically break out, be the real breakout. So silver's leading here off the bottom, but it's not going to be I'm with you. I think that gold is really where you want to pay attention to. That's the one that's. Yes.
And when you're doing that, you want to have a look at these bigger charts. So I'll just take off any annotations I have. And you'll see this commonality, the 80s run. You've got essentially that. And then you've got the absolute lows that I like to call Brown's bottom, because I was in the UK when Gordon Brown sold all Britain's gold, or 300 tons of it at least. And you've got another clear sign that you're on this squeezing higher, rising wedge, which highlights that the recent highs here is actually just a half move on the split. These are your main moves. That's the 80 move, a big up and a big decay. It's your biggest impulse, which is what you should have in a rising wedge. Your second impulse is very bloaty and slow, and that's exactly what happened. Second, and then it grinded along to eventually a kind of a low there. That's your second impulse. And you've actually really only done a part move to getting up. We've got another move up to go there, and then maybe a pullback, and then you get your real move. And that's why I was saying you might be selling out 70 or 80% at this point and doing reasonably well, very well, in fact, but you might in 3 years, 5 years later, actually just see such a change in the valuation that it's just quantum next level. Because I can't see gold not moving substantially.
Right. So if we look at kind of the breakout point, so my feeling on this is that gold's been in a 27-month correction since August 2020. And so since it's been such a long correction, once it gets back, say, 1950, 2000, 2050, once it gets there, it's going to have a lot of momentum based off of that 27-month. And that correction is going to extend out to 30 months, maybe longer. That's why I think 1950, 2000, 2050, it's going to be really, really hard to stop it from running to say 2200. Would you agree with that?
I think with where we at, I think there's going to be here's the big thing. We're talking about a paper price that is a derived market that I don't think for very long will probably easily continue. I mean, this is a COMEX futures market that I was on the dollar. And actually there's very little delivery and they've secured the right to do cash settlements and a lot of it is cash. The real market is actually the Chinese market where they actually deliver and the premium's already substantially higher there. I would like to just maybe let's leave the charts for a second and ask you the following. The Asian price of gold, there's a magnificent chart. Now, I always regret that I don't take a screenshot of it, but it showed the accumulation over decades of the price action of just the Asian session, just the London to the US session, and then the current gold price with both sessions. And I don't know if you've ever seen this chart, but it actually illustrates that in Asia, gold is largely being bought up, and it's a huge parabola. And then actually, if you took the London to the New York fix, it was actually a downwards trending chart over decades. And then the actual chart was the aggregation of both, one the extreme parabola, and you got the fairly strong upward moving gold chart. In essence, you're having one market trade consistently. Literally, you could have set an algo and a bot to this. I mean, if we'd had the technology from the 70s, it might even still be worth doing today, that actually bought and sold gold according to these daily seasonalities on an ongoing basis that would generate incredible alpha. And my question to you is it not possible? Because I always think there's a reason for this. Why things don't keep happening without a reason. There's a pattern. There's clearly a pattern. And it's clearly a pattern that one side is taking the delivery and the other is trading paper. And there's very little delivery going on. And it so happens that the one that's taking delivery is bidding up and buying the market. And the one that is trading nothing more than a paper derived contract is selling. So we don't have a complete fake gold market. We have a partially fake one. You have a legitimate one in one part of the planet, and you have a manipulated one on the other part of the planet. And the manipulated one appears to be holding a discount window open for the other half by leveraging banks, paper, balance sheets, off-balance sheet items, who knows what skullduggery and the full Enron truth that will eventually spill when this whole rotten animal spills its guts. But the truth of the matter is, why would that be? And you look at China, the Triffin's dilemma is the nation that has the global currency ends up being a buyer of last resort and exports its currency, the dollar. And in essence, that those other currencies, say China, that's the biggest producer to that currency. So Americans are overweight, lying on sun loungers and ordering martinis and burgers and saying, put it on my tab, put it on my tire. And Chinese men, in the simplification of the world, are running around serving this person all the time and getting this lengthy tab. And the question is, they know the tab doesn't get paid. So what is compensation for the fact that this debt doesn't end well? I mean, the Chinese people are still a smart nation. They'll know they're sitting with a trillion in treasuries. How do you compensate somebody for being a bag holder, a future bag holder, in something that will not reconcile well for them on their balance sheet? Well, you cooperate in maintaining a discount window for them to net accumulate something that does have value, something like that. And that is inherently built into the system, and we're watching it in plain sight. How else do you explain that? That is a speculative notion that I have concocted. Is there any possibility that there's some validity to it? Because it makes sense to me in my brain.
About that chart about the trading in Asia and in Europe and the U.S. I followed that over the years. It's been fairly consistent, where the price will be higher in Asia, and then by the end of the day, it's down, it drops back down, especially in the U.S. And I call them the banksters. The banksters. It's like they have an agenda to keep the price of gold down. First of all, Wall Street doesn't like anybody buying gold. A lot of people, their stockbrokers, they don't even mention gold to their customers. It's you can ask them, do you have any gold products? And a lot of them will say no. So gold has always been kind of a nemesis, if you will, of Wall Street and the banks. And they don't, because it's, if you print all these dollars, then in theory gold should go up too, but it doesn't, right? If you look at how much money printing there's been, gold should be they say over $10,000 if you equate it to the money supply. So since it's not equated to the money supply, you have to ask yourself why. And the why is, in my opinion, is manipulation. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Somebody is preventing gold from going higher, because if it was traded the same way there was in Asia, it probably would be over $3,000. But now I think that China doesn't like this situation where the U.S. and China are competing head to head for who's going to be the global economic superpower. I mean, if you look at China, they're an exporting nation. They're exporting to Africa. They're exporting to South America. They're definitely competing with the U.S. head to head economically, when their currency is basically not getting, any respect, if you will, as far as international trade goes. And so they want to do something about it. And I think that the Ukraine war is basically the opening for China to do something about it. Because the Ukraine war is now changing international trade to a certain extent, to where commodities now matter. Russian oil matters, if you will. Russian commodities matter. They matter in some respects more than the U.S. dollar. And so that is starting to turn. The worm is turning. And this is very negative for the U.S. It's very negative, because the U.S. has been able to dictate their terms economically. They basically control, we basically control Europe, if you think about it. U.S. is really... U.S. is the big dog, and we kind of dictate the terms on what happens. I don't think Europe really wanted to get involved in the Ukraine war, but the U.S. made it. The U.S. made Europe get involved in the Ukraine war. And so now the apple cart has been turned over, and now we're going to see what happens with the BRICS and the BRICS Plus. The BRICS Plus is definitely expanding. I think that the BRICS Plus is going to come out with a new currency, an international trade currency, and that's going to have an impact on the dollar as well and have a negative impact on the U.S. economy. So kind of the big wild cards here is South Korea and Japan. So do South Korea and Japan ignore the BRICS, or do they join them? I think they have to join them, because everybody else in Asia and Africa and South America is going to be involved. So does South Korea and Japan say, no, we don't want anything to do with you guys? Those are the two wild cards here.
Japan is a special one, because Japan kind of has a very adversarial relationship with both China and even South Korea, you can argue. And was the wrong side of the war, so they're not easy bedfellows. South Korea has a common enemy in Japan with China, I suppose, they could join the BRICS. They are an incredibly leveraged society, South Korea. That's what many people don't realize. And we have a massive USD Korean won that we still expect to see happen, which is not bullish dollar. It is just absolutely unwind of the Korean won, major move that we are still expecting to have happen, which I think will be even better handled if you're in gold and silver in due course. Just talking about gold and silver prices, the US debt clock, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it, but I just thought I'd pop in and do an update because I haven't been there in a while. The current gold dollar to silver ratio for all debt issued and dollar to gold ratio for all debt issued. They've got a 3,125 per ounce already gold. So if you had an ounce of gold if you had gold backing all the debt that had been issued, and if you had silver backing, you'd get silver disproportionately, you can see the effect, 424. So silver truly is the upside wild card in terms of normal ratios of debt and holding. And it was $2.66 per ounce in 1913. That's a long, long time ago to only be 10 times today. You know, not even 10 times today, $2.66.
The other ratio I think that's important is the gold Dow ratio. And that's another one it's out of balance. It's going to tighten.
Very, very out of balance. I love that you do the cross analysis. And one of the ones we do is gold Dow. And I was let's let that chart go and let's go get that. I love doing that, and we can cross that.
Yeah, I think they're going to go to, it's going to go to 2-1 is my prediction. But it depends on how much money they print, if they can keep the Dow up. But I think we could see maybe 20,000 on the Dow and 10,000 on gold.
2000 was the extreme lows on all the charts that I've looked at, the relative valuation. It was worse than it's ever been in terms of gold's valuation to equities. And we're not very far off it. If you have a look at the 80s, and this is the problem I haven't got on this chart history, I haven't got something that's got the 1980s in there as an equity index. So I'll have to find that. But, you know, there is just no comparison. People are hopelessly underinvested in gold in comparison to equities and the culture of equities. So with this change, with this hyperstagflationary model, it's going to be more like I don't like saying the same as, because nothing is the same, but just certain elements. It's going to be an extreme version of the 60s, 70s stagflationary period, only even more hyper. So I think the culture of equity is going to go away. Shares are going to be moribund, slow. They went sideways for decades. They went down a lot.
That's exactly my call. I basically say there's going to be a lost decade for the U.S. That right now,
decades. I see multiple decades. This is extreme. If we had it in the 70s as stagflation, which went all the way, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, wasn't a great period. We had a culture of equity after the Faulkner title. And the hyper-financialization. So we've had turbocharged equity markets, plus a boomer generation that were, you know, slowly getting through their most productive years into retirement. So in essence, that was, people think that's the standard for equities, and it isn't. It's the best it could possibly be by demographics, by monetary policy. You also had globalization, the Goldilocks economy, that's kept artificially low inflation rates on account that he couldn't create any inflation. Meanwhile, you were getting asset price inflation. So this was the perfect storm of ideal circumstances for equity. And what that did is that suppressed gold.
Right.
And what's now happening is we're going into a hyper version of the stagflation we got 50s, 60s into the late 70s, and that was a multi-decade period. So you're going to have equities just hopelessly underperforming and bonds. So can I also say the bond market was a bull market, but you had a simultaneous bond bull and equity bull on account of cheap and easy money, on account of globalization, on account of demographics, on account of every possible macro feature that you could have. You've had pumpamentals. And in essence, all of those are not correcting, they're reversing as violently as they went up because you've got an unwind. So as far as you overreact to the upside, you've got to overreact now to the downside. So we're going to have a very, very bad, moribund, low growth equity environment.
Yes.
Retail is going to have no money. They're going to have no savings. They're not going to be putting anything in there. Who's going to be these buyers? You know, it's the existing owners, and they're going to be dying, and it's being sold off. So that's kind of what I see, and that's what's going to lead to, again, a very ideal circumstances. And you're going to have bonds that essentially should be worth zero, in my opinion, given the proliferation, that are going to be, they're either going to do a complete jubilee and allow it to happen lockstep, or they're going to continue to compound away losses in bonds until everybody realizes that's the game and they move into gold. So in essence, this is you have the super day of bright light with extended hours. Now you have the 6 months of winter that you had your 6 month day, and you're on the little pole. And so it's going to be brutally cold and dark, and that's where gold lies.
Right. You mentioned all this array of things that are basically all kind of reversing. And one of the big ones is demographics, which you mentioned. So in the US, the baby boomers are retiring at a very fast clip right now. Every month, you know, tens of thousands retire. And so when they retire, their incomes decrease. Their incomes, they stop getting that income. And then since they don't have the income, they're not spending it.
The cost of doing that.
Yes. So that's a headwind for the economy. So you got that headwind. And then in tandem with that headwind, you have more technology now. So a lot of robotics, right? A lot of AI, a lot of innovations in the workplace where, you know, Zoom, for instance, where you can work from home, you know, more productivity. You don't need as many workers. Musk just showed it, right? Twitter, he laid off a third of their staff and they didn't need them, right? That's a signal. You know, we got a lot of fat that people are going to lay off. So it's going to be really tough to restart the economy, really, really hard. So I think it's going to be, like you said, I call it muddling. We're just going to be like stuck in the mud. It's going to be really hard to create growth, really, really difficult. And then they're going to, you know, and nobody's going to have money. So they're going to have problems with liquidity. So they're going to print money to bail out like pensions, because pensions are all going to have a lot of problems with pensions because you're not going to have any growth. If you don't have any growth in the stock market and the pensions don't have enough money, they have a problem. It's almost a whole series of events that are all kind of conspiring against the U.S. economy that's been happening over 20 plus years. And it's all coming to a head right now. It's like, how do we, you know, how do we overcome this? And so gold and silver, they're very undervalued. You mentioned it. I mean, if you look at gold versus equities, you know, silver versus equities, silver versus the money supply, they're very, very undervalued. People have not been exposed to them. And then it comes down to the question, are people going to be attracted to gold and silver? How much attraction is going to be there? How much demand? And that's where, for me, the bond market comes into play. So if you look at Exeter's pyramid, right? The money only moves to gold. So Exeter's pyramid is an upside down pyramid with gold at the bottom, right? People only move to gold if they don't trust bonds, they don't trust fiat, they don't trust stocks, right? As long as they trust those three things, then they don't move there. But if we get into this systemic risk where we're not growing, then people will congregate into gold because the systemic risk is going to be too high. They'll have to go there for hedging. And so US dollar, you mentioned a jubilee. What I think is going to happen is the US is going to lose their ability to print at will. Like right now, the Fed tomorrow could print $4 trillion and do it. But they're going to lose that ability to print at will. And once that happens, what I think is going to happen is they're going to have to default on a portion of the debt. They won't default on all of it. But if you own a U.S. bond, they're basically going to say, you know, we're only going to pay you back 75%. So we can't pay you all of it, right? We're going to make people take a haircut, something like that. I just don't think they'll default on all of it. But
if you impoverish, if you're seeking to impoverish the global populace, you just engineer a Russian banking hack narrative and you zero the balances and you've scotched the liability on the banks' balance sheets of immense scale.
That's when the U.S. becomes the global pariah, right? And I can't even name it. That's the Mandibles. Did you read the Mandibles?
No.
You heard of that book? I recommend it. You'll enjoy it. The Mandibles is a story written, and it's about basically the whole world ganging up on the United States and forcing the U.S. to pay back their debt, but not in dollars. We become broke. We're broke. So they make a new currency. They create a new currency like the BRICS currency. They call it the Banro, the Bancor. So the international community creates a new currency called the Bancor, and the Bancor is backed by gold and commodities. And they have to pay the U.S. has to pay back the debt in Bancors. They can't pay dollars. We don't want your dollars. We don't stink your dollars.
The U.S.
has to sell all their gold and buy the Bancors, and their dollars are worth nothing. So, you know, $1 million for 100 Bancors, right? But we have to pay everybody back. We have to pay our debt back in Bancors. And that's the situation that's coming up. It's basically the U.S., the globe is going to gang up on the U.S. dollar and say, wait a minute here, we don't want your stinking dollars, but you owe us this debt. You got to pay us back in something, pay us back in gold maybe. Gold's going to come to the fore one way or another. It's going to come to the fore, I think. Indeed. I don't think that gold is going to, you know, disappear here or not be important here. It's going to come to the fore very, very soon. You know, that debt chart you just showed, I mean, silver at $400, it's supposed to be worth $400. And it's at 20, it's 22. Silver's getting ready to absolutely explode here. And people are not ready for it. They're not expecting it.
People don't have enough silver, and the miners as well. Imagine now those will do as well. Don, this has been awesome. I've really enjoyed it. We've taken a long session. We'll split it into a couple of parts. How do people find and engage with your lovely details that you have for your 900 companies, goldstock.data.com? Is that it? Hook up with you.
Yeah, so if you have invested in gold and silver mining stocks, if you haven't, then you probably want to read my book. But if you own any gold and silver mining stocks,
give us the title.
Yeah, come to my website, goldstockdata.com. If you want a free trial, send me an email. I'll give you a free trial. And then follow me on Twitter. Just go to Twitter and do Don Durrett. You'll find me. And I'm on Twitter quite a bit. So those are the two places. So thanks a lot for having me on.
Can you get the title of your book as well, Don? The guys can go
Yeah, the book. So on Amazon, it's called How to Invest in Gold and Silver with a Focus on Mining Stocks. So you'll know the cover. So if you just go to Amazon and put my name, Don Durrett, and look for a book that has gold on the cover, you'll find it.
How to invest in gold.
You can read the reviews. The reviews are very good.
Yeah, go get Don's book, and also go find your way to his website, as we already did, goldstockdata.com. 900 companies being covered. That's pretty comprehensive. All the ones that are from 10 million upwards, and I would suggest focusing on 100 million plus. Don, it's been great. I really enjoyed it. Lots of interesting points. Thanks for having a discussion with us today, and wish you a good week ahead.
Thank you, Francis. Thanks for having me on.